Hello, it is May 27th, 2014. This is episode 422 of the Will Leach Experience podcast on Sports on Earth. Today's death, Edsel Ford, who died May 27th, 1943. The only son of Henry Ford, Edsel, named after his father's closest childhood friend, was made president of Ford Motor Company at only 26 years old in 1919. He had a difficult relationship with his father and was obsessed with quality rather than sales. He once said, quote, "Father makes the most popular car in the world. I would like to make the best car in the world. Lincoln." His father constantly undermined him, though. He once fired all of Edsel's staff overnight without warning, just because Edsel criticized Ford's braking system, and Edsel began to develop ulcers. They quickly became cancerous. Henry Ford refused to admit Edsel was sick, quote, "It was all due to Edsel's high-flying lifestyle," he said after the diagnosis. But Edsel died within a year at the age of 49. 4 years after his death, his father, said to be racked with guilt about the way he treated his son, also died. 14 years afterward, Ford would name their fanciest new car after him, called the Edsel. It is considered the biggest flop in automotive history. Here in Athens, though, it is merely Tuesday. I'm Will Leach, and I thank you for spending part of your day with me. I hope everyone had a wonderful Memorial Day weekend. I went nowhere. I spent a lot of time inside watching baseball and grilling things and drinking beverages. That's what you're supposed to do on Memorial Day for the troops. Anyway, we are a week away, 2 weeks away, or probably 2 weeks away, I would say, from our big explosion lookout. Holy crap. World Cup week. We're going to do a whole bunch of World Cup shows with a lot of really awesome guests because I have a World Cup fever. It's like a rash. You don't stop scratching, it'll never heal. But that's not this week. We got one more week before that happens. So we got, here's my baseball guests. I always promise a weekly baseball guest. Today's is Jack Moore. Jack is a baseball writer for Sports on Earth, as well as The Score, Beacon Reader, and The Classical. I originally came across his work from Fangraphs. He is a very smart man, and he's also a fan of the Milwaukee Brewers, which is, you know, hopefully we won't tussle. All right, Mr. Moore, first off, thank you for your time. Now, as we stand first off, thank you. I didn't give you a chance to respond to my thank you. Thank you, Jack.
Hey, thanks for having me on. It's my pleasure.
All right, cool. There we go. That formality is out of the way. Now to the real business. You, I don't understand, but coming into this year, I heard you on Baseball Perspectives preview podcast with Ben and Sam, and I listen to that show every day, and I sometimes fast forward through the mail show. But, you know, generally speaking, I listen to them every day, and I loved you on there because, you know, they were operating from this note. You were on the Brewers show and they were operating from this notion that the Brewers somehow seemed doomed. That I think Baseball Perspectives had them 30th in their 25 and under talent rankings. Jason Parks had them 29th in prospect rankings overall. And here they are, a game and a half up on the Cardinals and in first place in the NL Central. Now they're not, you know, they're not at the torrid pace they were earlier, but they've overcome a lot of but they've dealt with a lot of crazy injuries. My first question, and there are several follow-ups, how exactly is this happening?
I mean, I think the real thing is the Brewers have a lot of good star players in that 25 to 30 range that, you know, it's not exactly the sexiest age range right now with all the guys that are dominating in their 20s and, you know, Bryce Harper in his teens, but between Carlos Gomez, Jonathan Lucroy, Ryan Braun, there's three guys in their mid to late 20s that are playing as good a baseball as anybody in the league right now. And, you know, between them and a crew of, you know, good starting pitchers, again, in that most of them in that 25 to 30 age range, they just have players that are in the middle of their prime and that they were able to get for a lot cheaper than obviously they were worth.
Now, when they put – coming into the season, I think on their podcast, I think you said, 84 wins? I think you had them a little bit above 500.
Yeah, I think I had them at 82.
Yeah, around then. I said 97 because I'm an asshole Cardinals fan. I said 97 in 1990 when they had, like, Greg Jeffries. And so I say 97 every year. But I'm curious, do you – so was the – You write about baseball not only eloquently but very intelligently. When you look at this start, do you see Does this look right, like where they are now? Do you think they're a little above? Do you think they're a little below? How much of the injuries affected them? When you look as someone that's followed the team this closely, and but also with an analytical eye, do you think are they where do they stand going forward?
Well, looking at this team as we came into the year, you know, I projected an 82-win team because that was, you know, roughly the average of, you know, you play out the season a few times in your head, you can see, well, maybe they're going to be awful. Everybody gets hurt again. They end up with the kind of festering wound at first base that they had last year with Juan Francisco and Yuni Betancourt and all those guys, right? And you can totally see the disaster idea that I think a lot of people saw with the Brewers this year. And you could also see, you know, the very optimistic point in which all the young guys, you know, Scooter Gennett, Chris Davis, Willie Peralta, those guys all come out strong in their free agent acquisitions like K-Rod and their trade acquisitions like Will Smith all come out, you know, hot and just they win all those deals. And so that's what happened in April. It's all those guys came out on fire. And since then, between the injuries and a few of those guys, like, you know, K-Rod has finally blown a couple of saves now, and Scooter Gennett isn't exactly on the kind of fire that he was to begin the year. But overall, I mean, they've had the success of guys like Willie Peralta particularly and, you know, Mark Reynolds as a free agent pickup. Those look like pretty real things, and those are the things that I needed to see to think that they were more than a 500 team. So although I don't think, you know, with the Cardinals only two games back, I think the Cardinals still have to be considered the favorite in that division, but the Brewers should – they have to be considered a contender for both the division and the wild card spots.
Yeah. Now today, both your Brewers and my Cardinals had a very, both of them had very frustrating losses. I think yours was actually a little bit more frustrating. You were a little closer to winning than the Cardinals were. But as of, I don't know what it is on Tuesday morning, but as of right now, the Brewers are, according to Baseball Prospectus playoff odds, which I stare at way more than I should, the Brewers are at 52.6% odds to make at least one of the two wild cards. Does that sound right to you?
Yeah, I think it does, and I think it's important. You look at those odds. I think they give an expected winning percentage for the rest of the year, right? And The Brewers still right around 500. So it's not like the system has really changed its mind on how good this team is. If you thought the Brewers were a 500-ish team coming into the year, which, I mean, you look at everything that's happening, it still would be a pretty reasonable assumption. You might even, I'm biased, obviously, but you might even take it a bit higher. And so, yeah. I mean, they're nine games up. A 500 team that's nine games up should have a pretty good chance of making the playoffs.
Yeah, the whole wins in the bank idea, the notion that just because you may be a 500 team on the whole, if you're above 500 now, those wins don't go away.
Absolutely, and that's why, April and May games for most teams end up being the most important games of the year.
So
you can play yourself out of it quick.
Right. And sometimes you can think you're out of it when you're not necessarily. I think we may see this with the Red Sox a little bit right now. I think everybody's completely freaking out. The Red Sox are completely freaking out right now, but they're still it's not been a good start, but like I think even now, I think what's the perspective of it has them at 13% playoff odds, which is obviously below where they'd like to be, but it's not, this season is over the way that I remember Billy Bean talked about this a few years ago about how he felt like being in first place in mid-August was such a great place to be because come September, so many teams have given up.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Yeah, so well, good. Well, I am hopeful. I'm curious where the Brewers stand long-term. Is that 2500 thing something to be worried about? Is the low prospect thing? Like, I remember the year that in 2011, where it really felt like the Brewers, 2010, a little bit in 2010, even a little bit, where it felt like the Brewers, especially 2011, were going all in. This was the year they had to win this year and so on. Is this year now in 2014, is this year unusually important? Are they in trouble after this year? Can they sustain something? What's the best strategy for them moving forward?
Is this year unusually important? I would say no, because the only two major contracts they have coming off the books at the end of the year are Ricky Weeks is $10 million, which really, even though he's been excellent in a bench role, with all his injuries, he's just not an everyday player anymore. And so they'll be happy to get rid of that off the books. And then the other one is Aramis Ramirez, who's making $60 million this year and has not spent a whole lot of time in the field. So those are places where they should be able to upgrade. And they're still going to have, again, that it all comes back to me, for me, that trio of stars in Braun, Lucroy, and Gomez, who those are all guys who will probably make the All-Star game this year. Although Braun, I suppose, had with his whole steroid thing, he could be an All-Star level player and not make the game. But, the point stands. And then you have that whole rotation that has been so excellent in Gallardo, Peralta, Kyle Loesch, Matt Garza, and Marco Estrada. Those guys are all going to be around. You still have Will Smith. You still have Tyler Thornburg. You still have Jimmy Nelson, who came up and got his first win. In terms of short-term talent, I don't think the worry is the next year or the next 2 years. I think the problem is you don't see the consistent pipeline that they had when Jack Z was drafting and they got Prince Fielder, Ryan Braun, J.J. Hardy, Corey Hart, Ricky Weeks, all those guys in the course of 5 years. They are going to need to get a few more stars from within the organization soon. They've been really running heavy and really getting Carlos Gomez, which was such an important stroke of, you kind of have to call it luck. I don't want to call it luck because, Gomez is an extremely talented player and there's no luck there, but for the Brewers to be the ones that managed to unlock it, I think, certain element of luck there.
What happened to Ricky Weeks? There was a time I thought that I was at a Gwinnett Braves game this weekend. I saw Jamil, his brother, play for Norfolk. Another guy I thought was going to be awesome too. But particularly Ricky, I really thought he was going to be an All-Star for years. What changed with him? Did anything change?
Yeah. So 2009, he started out really hot. Had 9 home runs in 37 games before he tore his wrist sheath, which is the same injury that Mark Teixeira is coming back from this year. And that's an injury that they're able to fix real well. Once they do the surgery on it, you actually can't break it again. And so the next 2 years, Weeks had his two best years of his career. He had .269 with an .825 OPS, 49 home runs between the two seasons. I mean, that's as good as it gets for a second baseman.
Yeah.
And but towards the end of the 2011 season, he tore his ankle on this really vicious play. He was running out of a grounder, and he extended too far to first base, and he landed on the bag funny, and his ankle, the inside of his foot, almost came up and touched his shin. It was really gross. And he came back in the playoffs, but was awful, and he was terrible to begin 2012 as well. And it just never looked like he had his balance at the plate and in the field, really. We've seen guys struggle with ankle injuries a lot recently. The other two names that come to mind are Ike Davis and Derek Jeter. It's just a tough injury to recover from, and then he blew out his hamstring last year. But this year, he's been 304 with .795 OPS. He's been great off the bench.
So, all right, so I want to talk about some of the stuff you've written about. Specifically, you wrote something for us about Giancarlo Stanton. It's weird. Someone brought this up in the comments, too, and that's my mistake. I read the comments. I'm sorry. I don't usually do it as an expert. it is strange to, like, a guy to have his size, like, obviously he's strong, but, like, he's not, like, to have that kind of consistent, crazy power. Usually they're your Bonds or your Maguire or your a fielder in a lot of ways. You're chubby. What is it about Stanton, like, is, I know this is as healthy as he's been for a long time, but, like, going forward, if he stays healthy, are we looking at, does he have the type of numbers early on and the type of body type early on that this can sustain for a long period of time, or is he going to be like a comet that we get really excited about and then the Mets sign him and everything falls apart?
Well, we'll have to keep him away from the Mets, of course. But I think you look at him. I can't really think of guys his height in particular. Yeah. That have, it's so hard to hit when you're tall because your strike zone's so huge. And I remember watching Corey Hart, and he was really susceptible to the balls diving away from him. And it was, I don't know if that's a thing that's necessarily a part of being a tall hitter, but it really seems like we don't see as many just huge hulking dudes like that, as you would expect, since of course they're going to hit the ball hard. They're huge. But, you know, he has the ability to make enough contact, whereas, you know, you see the other guys that hit the ball like him, like Adam Dunn and Mike Morse, they don't, even though Stanton has some strikeout issues, he makes decent enough contact that it doesn't really matter. And so I think with him, he's 24, he is going to get bigger, and his, and more importantly, he's going to be able to, you know, just keep refining his swing every year to the point where he's able to keep getting the way he hits the ball the opposite way this year is amazing, and it's something that we haven't seen out of him. But since he's so big, it's just a matter of, it's hard to hit the ball that far when the ball's far away from you. You can't get the leverage, but since he's so huge, he can do it. I think he could do this for years if he stays healthy.
So, which of course brings up the question, when does he leave Miami? And when does that happen? Like, you know, it was fun. There was that brief moment when Hernandez was dominating too, and Stanton was doing this, that it felt that this could be another one of those cool, one of those briefly hip Marlins teams, the ones that are like almost like counterintuitively hip. Because of the Marlins, like just those young, exciting teams that take off that way. Now that Hernandez is gone, it feels like it's just Stanton again, and not a lot of other things to watch. Do you think that it hurts him? I'm just looking at stat-wise. Does it hurt him to be on this Marlins team? I saw something asking, once again, why people are continuing to pitch to him. Is he better off somewhere else? What are the benefits and the deficits for him being in Miami?
Well, this team, they at least tried to put some guys around him this year as opposed to last year. I mean, Casey McGee is hitting pretty well behind him, and yeah. You know, maybe that doesn't last, but then they have multiple guys besides just him that are hitting this year, so they can actually protect him in the lineup a little better. It's not, doesn't seem like it's the kind of issue where it was in 2013, which was just brutal, and you hate to see him have to go through that. But it's just so hard to imagine Stanton signing an extension with this team. Like, what's the impetus for him other than money that he will probably be able to get if he just keeps, he's gonna be in line to make probably $10 million in an arbitration case next year. So if he wants to wait until free agency, I think he'll be more than capable of doing it.
Yeah, and I'm loading up Cotts Baseball's contract right now. He is a free agent after, where is he? Where'd he go? But this is compelling right here. 2017. So that's like, yeah, I don't see why he wouldn't just go through ARB the next 2 years. He's making 6.5 this year. There's which leads into the question, can they trade him? Like, is there a bit, when does that thing turn to where it's like, okay, now it benefits us to trade him because he's still got 2 years. Is it this off season where you've got 2 years where he's just facing arbitration, or do they weigh it out?
Well, I mean, I think they obviously would look at the Miguel Cabrera trade as the closest thing historically, right? And even though that didn't really pan out for the Marlins, you. The guys that they got back, Cameron Maven was supposed to be a star. Andrew Miller was supposed to be a star. I mean, they would be able, if the Miguel Cabrera trade happened again with different names, with the same kind of guys, I think you'd get a lot of people saying that it was a coup for the Marlins just because of all the value on prospects. So I think they could probably wait until the year before he was going to be a Hall of Fame, or going to be a, getting ahead of myself there. Year before he's going to be a free agent and probably get still a huge haul. He's just that good.
Who, in your opinion, is going to win the American League West? I saw that the Angels passed on my beloved playoff odds report. They actually passed Oakland yesterday, which was a bit of a surprise. Do you think the Angels can win that division, or is that still Oakland?
I would still go with Oakland for now, but the Angels, with Pujols hitting, it was hard to imagine him doing this again after the last 2 years. But he's not the kind of on-base machine that he used to be, but the power's totally there again. And so you're talking about a lineup with Mike Trout and Albert Pujols, and they still have pretty good pitching. that's definitely enough to win a division. And if not, you got to think they're going to be right up there in the wild card race.
Yeah, that sets the error bar pretty high. When you've got Trout and Pujols at the top of their abilities, you kind of have to screw up a lot of other things to not have a good team around them when they do that.
Yeah, absolutely. And you got to like what they have up the middle with Kendrick and Ibar. And, Chris Sinet has been playing really well at catcher. So it's not like it's a shallow roster by any means. But it's not as deep as Oakland's. But Oakland is the king of depth right now. That's pretty much the new money ball, right. is depth. So the Angels can do it with star power, I think.
Which leads into a question about the Rangers. I find them kind of a fascinating team moving forward because it does, again, this season is not lost. Like, they're 500. I don't know if they lost today, they won today, but they're around 500. It's way too early for it to be lost, but it just feels like everything has landed on their head so much that it almost feels that way. If you're John Daniels right now, what would you do with that team? Would you just hold out? Would you start shopping in July? Do you realize going forward you still have enough talent that maybe you just have this year, like this is your cursed year, that you're just like, all right, these years happen, let's build up more. Do you do the San Antonio Spurs, Tim Duncan's hurt year, and just build after that? If you're Daniels, what would you do with that team right now?
Well, you got to remember they're going to be getting back Derek Holland at some point soon, I believe. That should be a big addition for them. When Matt Harrison gets back, that should be one too. They were doing okay despite Fielder not hitting for any power, so. If they were able to win with him playing like that, you should think they would be able to win if they can get a replacement type guy, like, maybe play Moreland every day and use DH as a rotating place to give guys time off. Or they go out and look at Kendrys Morales, which I know they've said that they're not going to do that, but who really trusts GM speak at this point? So I thought Morales was the best hitter left on the market back in, like, January, so it would be silly of them to not at least take a look and see what he wants. It would totally make sense if there's a team that wanted to get in there a little heavier or give him a multi-year deal. That's just not an option with Fielder around. But I think the Rangers, they have so much talent between guys like Andrew Beltre, Chu, Darvish. Again, so much star power in that division. So I think it would be silly to just give up.
One of my favorite things about your work is that I just know I can toss anything at you, and you're going to be ready. So, don't get me wrong. I'm not going to be like, so seriously, what's up with the Mississippi Braves this year? Their bullpen is a disaster. Like, I'm not going to do that. But I figure we stay on. Like, I have no idea if the Mississippi Braves. This has been an adjustment for me because I went to the Gwinnett Braves this weekend, and I had forgotten that all of the Atlanta Braves minor league teams are named the Braves. They have, like, the Rome Braves and the Mississippi Braves and the Gwinnett Braves, and it just seems a waste of resources if for the hats alone. Like, the glory of the minor league is the, oh, we have an alien on our hat. Here's a very angry beaver.
Yeah, Biscuit.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it seems a shame for that. Nothing about the Mississippi Braves. But I do want to ask about the Kansas City Royals because it does I feel like the Tigers – getting off to the start that they have and looking like a team that's more complete than even we might have thought they were going in. We've kind of taken a step back from this was supposed to be the year for the Royals. Like, this was supposed to be the, I know that they pretend otherwise, but if the Royals don't do it this year, should they start over? Like it feels like it was so, wasn't that long ago that we were like, wow, this is the last little stretch. The Tigers will have this little run before the Royals before the Royals own the division for 10 years. And nothing had like that has worked out at all. What do they do moving forward?
Yeah. So much for that prospect wave, huh?
Yeah. That didn't work at all.
But, I saw the news on Yordano Ventura having to come out of the game today. And he was throwing 91 his last pitch, which it's crazy that
that's
a sign that he's broken.
Right.
But if he's gone for the year, I don't really think they have much of a chance to compete with Detroit or, they'd have trouble competing with the other teams in the the bottom of the AL Central, I think. I don't think they'd be significantly better than Chicago or Cleveland, and even the way Minnesota's been playing this year. So, and I also really don't know if they have much of a choice but to start rebuilding after next year, because James Shields is probably going to be gone. Yeah, that's. I don't think he has an option for next year.
No, I thought that was the whole thing. No. Yeah, that's just one more thing you gave up with Myers.
Right, and so what are you going to build around Eric Hosmer? He's not hitting. Yeah. You can't build around Moustakas. He's not hitting. You can kind of build around Alex Gordon, who is, he started off slow, but he's been heating up, but he's getting older. I just don't see the star core of a team here.
All right,
Salvi Perez is a good piece for the future, but that's about it.
All right, so my last question for you, and thank you. This has been as much fun as I thought it was going to be, and perhaps even a little bit more. So be forewarned. Now you're about to get like tossed into the Joe Sheehan run lane of me, just people I just bother constantly to be on. So just forewarned, I apologize for that in advance. Are you going to watch the draft?
MLB draft?
Yeah. Will you watch? Because I want to get into it, and I like what they're trying to do, and I've even followed some of the prospect. I just really don't think I'm going to watch it.
Yeah, I don't know anything about any of those kids. So
it's weird because I want to do it. Like, I mean, it's funny. People always talk about, like, you know, the draft is good for baseball. It's good that they're televising it. And whenever people say things are good for baseball, it gets me excited because I really love baseball. And good, I'm rooting for that. Like, I want that to do well, because not so much that I want, you know, a bunch of owners to make a lot more money, but I want the game to continue to do well because I like it. I don't want it to go anywhere. You know, and
definitely.
And so go ahead. Yeah.
Isn't there going to be some baseball on during the draft? I'll probably just watch that.
Yeah. Right. Like, and I'm curious. That's actually a good question. If the NFL draft were played opposite a game, like an NFL game, I would have to think its ratings would be terrible. Don't you think? Like, I'm not football. I like football, ooh, but that's a good question. Like, obviously, the NFL's draft ratings are going to be higher than the MLB draft ratings. Regardless.
You'd go dual box, though. You'd have the draft on the one screen.
And then,
like the NFL Red Zone channel.
Yeah, it's true. And there is so much time during a football game where nothing is happening. Much more time in a football game where nothing's happening than there is in a baseball game where nothing's happening. So I think that's probably right. I think I would just, like, it's one game. It's the NFL. Who pays attention to one NFL game?
Nobody.
10 games landing on my face at once, is it even football? all right, Jack, thank you so much for chatting with me. This has been really fun. I'm going to bother you. Just to warn you, now in the Sheehan zone, and I'm going to be bothering you all the time to come on. So be forewarned. Our paths shall cross many, many times in the future.
Great. I'm looking forward to it.
Particularly when the Cardinals and Brewers play in the NLCS again. I avoided you during last time.
Oof.
I kept my distance from you last time on that.
That was hard. Yeah, that was a difficult emotional period in my life.
Yeah, because we had just together. We had just worked together on something. I specifically, in fact, it's ironically enough, the piece that we worked on together actually ran in the NLCS official program. So So I'm sorry about that.
That's right.
But I kept my distance from you during that, but I would love to have that happen again. And it'll be like in Heat. You know, we'll be at the diner and we'll sit across from each other.
Oh, God.
We'll be a very dorky Heat, to be clear. but also, we'll have some raw virility to it, I think.
No question. I just don't know if I'd be able to get through another one.
Yeah. That was, I don't even remember what happened. I'm sorry I brought it up. All right. Thanks, man. Thanks for coming on. Have a great one. By the way, for the last thing I want to mention here, while we've been doing this, just a few seconds ago, I believe, we lost his perfect game and his no hitter while we did this call.
Oh, yeah. Looks like it just happened.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that. That was really fun. That was.
Oh, we didn't even bring it up, though.
I know, because the bottom of the set, we were doing this at the bottom of the seventh inning, and the Dodgers scored three runs. So it took a really long time. So as I thought.
Oh, you saw Ryu was rounding the bases in his jacket. That's when you knew it was over.
I love it. There's nothing more.
No chance.
Nothing more I love than when they give the pitcher a jacket.
It's beautiful.
Seriously. Give, we don't want them to get cold. in Los Angeles.
It's like a wildlife snapshot.
It really is. It's beautiful. All right, man. Thanks. This was really fun. We'll chat soon. Keep up the great work, and I'll chat with you pretty soon.
Sounds good. Looking forward to it.
Yep.
Talk to you later.
All right, thank you to Jack Moore. You can follow him on Twitter at JH underscore Moore. J, which is at JH underscore MOORE. That's right. I spelled that correctly. Anyway, so you can also find his work on Sports on Earth along with other online writing establishments. This is the Will H. Experience Podcast. The music is by the Sundogs. Please rate and review us on iTunes. Wednesday's guest is Harrison Stark. He's the author of The Globalized Game, a geopolitical guide to the 2014 World Cup, currently available on Amazon, and the lead purveyor of Slate's new World Cup blog, The Spot. We're going to talk soccer and Lynn Donovan and soccer. I guess those two things are mostly the same. Anyway, have a great day. I'll talk to him and you tomorrow.